Welcome back to the FKT podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today, I'm joined by two athletes who set stout times on Vermont's long trail. They are Tara Dower, who set the overall and women's supported time in 3 days, 18 hours, and 30 minutes, and Tori Constantine, who took down the women's unsupported time in 5 days, 19 hours, and 29 minutes. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show today to talk about the long trail. I'm excited to chat with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm Tara.
Thanks for having me as well, Tori.
So I figure maybe we'll just start out. I think most of our listeners are pretty familiar with what the long trail is. That's one of our premier routes. But I would like to just start out with asking each of you why you decided to set an FKT on the long trail. Tara, why don't you go first?
I decided to do the long trail as FKT because I've always been intrigued by the long trail. Ever since I did the Appalachian Trail in 2019, we got to where they join up and somebody was telling me about the long trail. I was like, oh, it's so cool. Just another trail. And it's through Vermont. And it was the first time I ever went to Vermont when I did my thru hike in 2019. I just remember the state being so cool. And it also smelled so good. And I was like, The long trail is just for sure one I want to do. I just want to explore the state more. I had a lot of friends in the state. I knew there was a good support team there. So it just seemed natural for that to be the next trail to focus on.
And Tori, how are you?
I kind of accidentally started my thru hiking journey back in 2020 with the long trail. So it also just felt naturally like the trail I had to go back to. And when I was thinking about doing a speed record, it was the one that I was most passionate about. I also moved to Vermont in January, so it was really nice because a lot of the northern parts of the long trail were kind of my backyard and easily accessible for training.
I just would like to know why you chose the direction you chose and also the modality, because Tara, obviously you set a supported record. Tori, you set an unsupported record. So just speak to like why you chose what you chose. Tori, you want to go first?
I went southbound mostly because I had gone both directions on thru hikes in the past. And southbound, just not that it's easier, but there are sections that are a little bit nicer when you're going south. And also knew that the northern sections were the sections that would be harder to move super fast in anyways. And my pack would be heavier there being on an unsupported record. So it made sense to me to have a heavier pack on the northern section and then get into the southern section and the AT and have my pack be lighter and ideally be able to move a little faster. I don't know if that's actually how it went. Didn't feel that way. And as far as going unsupported, I came into this really only with thru hiking experience and pretty minimal trail running. So I just felt like it combined my thru hiking and wanting to go fast, but not having a whole lot of ultra running experience, made the most sense for me to do an unsupported.
Tara, how about you?
Yeah, southbound because same thing with the Appalachian Trail the year before. I just wanted to get the tougher parts done with first. Just mentally, it's easier for me to get through it first and not have it looming in the distance. I know I'd always feel anxiety if I knew it was coming up. And honestly, those sections, like Tori said, it's not like it's any easier. The entire trail is pretty rugged, but Mansfield and Whiteface, Madonna and Camel's Hump, it's just nice for me personally, anxiety-wise, to get those done in closer in the beginning when I'm fresher. And then for supported style, I have wanted to do something self-supported or unsupported for a while. I just think I'm in this period, in this trail career, I call it, where I have a lot of friends who are stoked on FKTs, supporting FKTs and crewing them. And I have this great support system in Vermont. It just seemed natural to do a supported hike again. One day I'm going to get back out there and try to do self-supported. But right now I'm just really stoked on supported.
Right. That makes sense. So maybe expanding on that a little bit, can you talk, Tara, about your crew? Like, was this like a reunion of everybody from the AT? Was it a little different? What was the crew aspect of this effort like?
Oh, it was so cool. Yeah, it was definitely a reunion of people from the Appalachian Trail. a lot of my through hiking friends have just met on trails. And then it was a combination of those through hiking hiker trash people. And then it was this crew of Vermont people. And they just like meshed together so well. It was so cool. Tori came out. I met Tori out there. Tori's one of the people that Rascal knew from the PCT, I believe. But yeah, it was just so cool to have this big group of Vermonters and through hikers coming together. And I've always said this, it's a team effort no matter what. So it was just all of us working together. And it was just such a good group.
That's awesome. Tori, obviously you didn't have a crew because you were unsupported. But I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the logistical side of preparing for an unsupported FKT, because that's not the same as wrangling a crew and you don't have other people doing the logistics for you. So maybe just talk about what that looked like for you.
This was my first FKT. So I thought I kind of knew what I was doing just from research. And there was a lot that I was unprepared for. I had to have all of my food and everything I thought I would need with me. And I ran out of a lot of stuff. So that was definitely a learning experience. And then as far as logistics for getting to the terminus and getting picked up, I had my roommates who are both through hikers, and they brought me to the northern terminus and then picked me up at the southern terminus. They were also great point people to call throughout when I was hitting a low or needing to try to figure out where there might be water next. Logistically, I had planned on only having a liter of water capacity, and there was a lot of dry sections of trail this summer, so that was really tough.
Yeah, I mean, it was a super dry year in the Northeast this year. I can imagine that was pretty a challenge. You've kind of touched on this, you know, like that this was like the trail you were really passionate about and that's why you wanted to set an FKT on it, Tori, but I just want to know, like, why you chose such a hard and difficult trail for your first FKT. Is it just because it was the one that, you know, got your stoke up the most? Or, I mean, it just seems like a big one to go for.
I guess going into it, had no idea if I could do it or not. So for me, it was just like, if I'm going to spend the next 6 months training for something and put a lot of time and effort into it, it has to be something I actually care about. And so the long trail was that for me. And I didn't really know until I was out there if I could do it.
Right.
Yeah. Even out there, I don't think it really hit me until I was past Killington. But I was like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely on track to get the record. And as long as nothing horrible happens, I can probably do it. But yeah, it was definitely a little ambitious.
It's a big goal to go after for your first FKT. Tara, I would love to hear, since obviously you did the AT last year as an FKT, what did you bring from the AT, or what did that experience teach you that you brought to the long trail? How did those inform one another?
Yeah, well, the AT is different in the way that it's just like keeping the wheels on the bus until the very end, and then you just kind of destroy yourself for the last like 3 days. And so I kind of viewed this as the last push on the AT, just like destroying yourself. It's like a sprint almost. So there's no keeping the wheels on the bus. But I learned from that last push, it was like 129 miles on the AT. This was obviously way longer, 272. But I was able to trust my body at that point. I knew that I could do it and I could work through some pretty low lows because I had gone for 38 days, and it was now I was pushing. So I knew I could do it, and I was just testing out a bunch of stuff as well. So stuff I didn't really have a lot of experience with was like sleep deprivation. I was hoping to sleep as little as possible. That I didn't really play with a lot on the AT. I think I was nervous, essentially just keeping the wheels on the bus as long as possible. And so that was something I experimented with. But I would say the AT gave me confidence to go for the long trail in such an aggressive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So you mentioned you experimented with sleep deprivation a little bit more on the long trail. Can you talk about that? How much did you sleep and how did that go? Did you have hallucinations? What sort of madness happens out there when you have experimented with your sleep deprivation?
Oh, yeah, it was so much fun. It was so much fun. I slept just under 3 hours. I took a break for an hour and a half and never fell asleep. And so that was a missed opportunity after Camel's Hump. But I was plenty tired after, I think it was the bread loaves that I did with Chewy and two other people. And I was like ready to take a nap after that. And then it was just so easy. I think 2:30s or a 45 in there somewhere. And it was, I got to the van and Rascal put me to bed right away. It did take a little bit for me to actually get tired enough to fall asleep. And the hallucinations were wild. After that first nap, that's when they really started. I was with Maya and Kara just set pretty cool FKTs in the Northeast. And I was with Mark and we were hiking through this area. Just kind of like it goes on and it goes on. It's right before Killington, I think. And yeah, I saw like this man in the woods with a red shirt and then just like several other like very boring hallucinations. But then it got really fun when I had like 20 miles left. I saw a 15-foot tall baby clown in the woods.
Oh my God, that would scare me badly.
Have you ever seen Spirited Away, the big baby in Spirited Away, like the giant baby? It was like that, but it was like scary and it was a baby clown. Oh. I saw like reindeer and I saw like a car in the woods. And then at one point, once I descended from Glastonbury, I saw road soda and I don't remember. I was like kind of confused at what he was telling me, but he had pants pizza and he was like, hey, do you want pants pizza? I was like, what? What are you talking about? It wasn't a hallucination. He actually had pizza heating up in his pants and it was so good. It was the best pizza.
Did you have people with you while you were having these hallucinations? Like, were you accompanying? Perhaps verification that there weren't actually giant clown babies in the woods?
Yeah, I was with Maya. Maya, I think I looked back at her. So I was like, I just saw a baby clown. Just like very, because you know it's a hallucination. You know it's a hallucination.
Right.
But it's just like, I just saw that and that was pretty cool. She's like, yeah, there's nothing there, but that is pretty cool. What else are you seeing?
I feel like it's good to have somebody to tell your hallucinations to when they're happening. Yeah. To like, I don't know. I feel like it's always very confusing to me when I'm hallucinating and I'm by myself. Like, even if I'm like 99% certain it's a hallucination, I'm like, but is it? Like, what if this was like actually, you know, I definitely, like, during a 100-miler one time, I was hallucinating that I was behind another runner, and they kept dropping grapes on the trail. Mm. And I'm really glad that I didn't pick them up and eat them, because after the race, I talked to the person. They were like, yeah, I wasn't eating grapes. And I was like, it was probably, like, animal droppings. And I was, like, imagining they were grapes, and I was really glad I wasn't picking them up and eating them. You know, I was just like, it would have been so good to have somebody there to be like, are there grapes on the ground? Are we following a trail of grapes?
Yeah, hallucinations are so much fun. And also by yourself, they can be slightly terrifying.
Right. And just confusing in general.
And confusing, yes.
Yeah. What about you, Tori? What was your sleep strategy like? How did the sleep play out? Did you have hallucinations? Did you see any giant clowns, like baby clowns?
No giant clowns for me, no. My plan for sleep was to sleep one chunk every day, and I was aiming for 2 to 3 hours. It didn't play out like that at all. I think on the first night, I did sleep for like an hour and a half, and then the second night, I slept for maybe 2 hours, and then after that, it was kind of just broken up into little naps, because I was just getting way too tired and needing more shorter naps throughout the day. So I started doing that. I was definitely hallucinating by probably night 3 was when I started really hallucinating. At first, it was pretty fun. I was going through the bread loaves at night. I saw a giant. I think I was just thinking of candy because I was pretty much out of all of my sour gummy worms. And so I kept seeing this life-size pinata. It was definitely just trees that were like, I don't know. But I saw it a few times. And then the last night, as I was coming in to the southern terminus, I started having some more disturbing hallucinations where I thought I was seeing messages written to me in the trail. So similar to the like grapes thing you were talking about, like I was so convinced it was real. Like I didn't really know it was a hallucination at the time. And so I got to the southern terminus and I asked my roommates, I was like, hey, did you guys like hike out the last 9 miles and like write me stuff on the trail? And they were like, no, why would we do that? I was like, oh, yeah, of course.
Right.
So I just played it off like it was nothing, but it was definitely a little scary.
Yeah, it's very interesting to me. I love to always ask people about their hallucinations because I feel like there's a certain level of similarity amongst people's those issues. I feel like night three is a very frequent time for them to begin. But then from there, there's just so different. And the way people hallucinate and the things their mind creates is always very different and very interesting. So, Tori, you said you had planned to sleep in chunks each day. So were you carrying like a tent and a sleeping bag and that sort of thing? Or what kind of gear were you carrying?
I was carrying a quilt. It was a 40-degree quilt. And I also had just like a ground sheet. It was a polycrow that I could put on the ground. I didn't carry a tent or a sleeping pad. I didn't carry a sleeping pad on the PCT. So I knew that I could sleep on the ground, and especially if I was super sleep deprived, I knew that I would be able to fall asleep. And then I just was counting on shelters if the weather got bad, but my weather window was perfect. I had 5 days of, it only rained for the last like 2 hours.
That seems extremely lucky weather-wise.
Definitely for Vermont, yeah.
yeah. Tara, what was your weather like? Did you have equally amazing weather or...
Yeah, it was perfect. The entire time I've been before I started the long trail and the week I stayed after, the entire time I was there, it was beautiful weather. There was just amazing weather. And I hear that it's just continuing, like Vermont's having such a beautiful summer and fall. And there's just barely any rain during the entire time I was there. I mean, there's no rain during my attempt. It was just perfect. And it got a little hot the first day and a half, but honestly, it was a non-issue.
Yeah, I was up there in July and it just rained on me all the time. So it must have been, it stopped at some point after I left. So you mentioned that you were there a little longer and beforehand. Did you spend a significant amount of time training on the long trail? Obviously, you've seen the southern half because you've done the AT, but did you spend a lot of time reconning the north? What did that look like for you, Tara?
Yeah, I had done the sections for the AT several times in Vermont, and I knew that pretty well. But I wanted to focus on Mansfield, Whiteface, Madonna, get really comfortable with that and get comfortable with Mansfield. So I trained a lot on those. I trained with Scott Benaroff when he was training for his Adirondack FKT just did.
Yep.
I trained with him on the long trail. And then in the Adirondacks, and then trained with Andy, Johnstone, and Maya. And they just know that the trail so well. So I was able to get so much beta from them. They're just so knowledgeable. I did Jay once, but I mainly focused on those four areas.
I'd like to talk a little bit about nutrition. Tori, you mentioned running out of sour gummy worms, but aside from sour gummy worms, what were you eating out there? How did you plan your nutrition? How did that work out for you?
I was not eating enough. I never really counted my calories. I would say my biggest downfall was I had no idea what I was doing food-wise or nutrition-wise. So I approached it more like a thru-hike and tried to bring a lot of solid food. I really just needed to be focusing more on carbs. By the end, the like couscous I had brought with like protein powder and stuff, I just couldn't even look at. I didn't want any of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I carried it all to the end. Yeah, I had a lot of oatmeal. What else did I have? It was like stuff that I definitely was just eating because it was all that I had in my pack, but it wasn't really giving me the energy I needed. I did have a lot of maple syrup, but that got to be too sweet at a certain point.
Yeah.
So I had trouble finishing the maple syrup too. I fortunately am back on the maple syrup train. I was a little worried that I was never going to eat it again.
That's pretty easy to do after an FKT. Never eat the food again. Just too much of it and too much like negative association. Tara, what was the nutrition like for you on this? How did you approach that?
Yeah, I'm really lucky in that I have Amy. She joined us on the Appalachian Trail in Vermont, well, right outside of Hanover. And she pretty much cooked for me the entire time. I would say like 4 or 5 weeks of the attempt. So when I say it's a team effort, it's a full team effort. I cannot be bothered to worry about my nutrition. It's just some reason it doesn't work for me. Whenever I make up the plan, it just doesn't work. So I leave that up to other people. But I have a nutritionist and he worked with Amy and I was in on that conversation and they were going over like tiers of food. So tier one, tier two, and tier three. And tier one just looked like sport nutrition gels or drink mixes. Tier two is a little more real food. Tier two is in the middle of tier one and tier three. Tier three is a sit-down meal, like pasta or whatever. And we were hoping to get 20 to 30 grams of carbs from tier one and then fill up the rest of my carbs. So we would do about 60 to 70 per hour. So the rest of those would come from tier two or tier three. But that's the extent of what I know. One day it'll make sense to me and I'll know what my body likes to eat. But for right now, I fully trust Amy and my nutritionist, Vic.
That is one of those nice benefits when you're supported, is you can delegate things like that to other people, that it doesn't have to take up space in your brain. You don't have to spend any energy on that. You're just like, okay, what am I eating? I'm eating this, you know, and then you're just trusting these people to give you what you need. Tori, like, I would love to hear about maybe, like, since this is your first FKT, I don't know, maybe you don't plan to ever do something like this again. If you were going to, what did you learn about this, about FKTs, about yourself, about this type of activity? What would you do differently? Do you think you'd try this again?
Yeah, I do think I'll do it again. It was a lot of fun. I mean, obviously it wasn't always fun, but I learned so much. Definitely would bring totally different food next time and focus more on carbs. And I would say I'd also approach sleep really differently and plan around the fact that I know I'm not going to sleep for a large chunk each day. I just don't think that worked for me at all. I was too anxious about not waking up if I fell asleep and really got into deep sleep. So I had trouble sleeping for more than an hour at a time. And I think I would plan around that more. I guess also bringing more foot care things. My feet got really gnarly by the end. I was calling it a cherry tomato, but it was literally a blister on my second toe on my left foot that looked like a cherry tomato.
Oh, God.
It started under my nail bed and it ended up popping at some point and my whole nail just like slid off. I lost three different toenails. I ended up with like a staph infection in one of my toes by the end. So,
oh, no.
I needed more Leukotape, lots more ibuprofen, definitely some more foot care thing.
Yeah. Tara, how about you? What did you learn on this? Any reflections on this FKT?
Well, I mean, I did learn a lot about sleep deprivation. And I was listening to your podcast with Scott today, and something he said connected with me, and that you're in these like sprint FKTs where it's just like you're going the entire time. Like on the AT, I was able to chunk it up. Like, okay, every day is its own day. Make this day the best day. And then you get to your van or you get to a tent and you sleep. And then the next day, worry about that. But with these FKTs, you're pretty much just from the beginning going. It's like 272 miles and you're halfway through and you're like, oh my gosh, this is never going to end. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to work hard the next day. And it's just never ending. I had this almost existential moment with three of my pacers, Emily, Road Soda, Matt, and then Rascal was there. It was early morning and I really needed to sleep. It was after the bread loaves and I was just so tired. And I was like, I'm not even halfway through. I am so tired and this is never ending. I am in this hellscape of a trail. It was dark, you know, in the darkness, it's just, you can't see anything. You're in it. And I want to remember that moment in those tough moments in the future, be able to tell myself, like, listen, we've been here before. It does end. All you have to do is keep going, keep it in perspective, get to the next road crossing. I had a pretty rough moment, like a rough 2 hours during that section. And I think I could definitely benefit from my past experience and being able to like get past that more efficiently, because it did slow me down a bit.
Is there anything that you would do differently? Like anything you'll apply going forward onto other efforts?
Oh, well, the next one I'm thinking about doing, it's way different from everything else I've ever done. And for that one, I might try or have the crew and the pacers. We decided to have ploppers. So I was dropping so many pacers that they turned into ploppers. And that was actually like, so clutch to have people. Essentially, these were people who weren't pacing, but they'd plop in. They'd plop to a where we'd connect to the long trail and give us a restock on food and water for these really, really long sections. And they'd bring the energy. And I think I'm going to implement that more if I do more supported things. And for this next one, I definitely, like, with how it is, a plopper is, it's like a plopper is a pacer for the pacer.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. For supported, that's at least what I'll do.
Yeah. That's interesting. Like, I haven't heard of that technique before.
We're coining it now, ploppers.
Are you trademarking that? You're going to?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's Road Soda's term.
Okay.
So he might get credit for that one.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. I could see where that would be beneficial for sure, especially in really long sections. Yeah. And maybe, Tara, you might have already just talked about this, but lowest low and highest high.
Oh, yeah. Lowest low is definitely like that early morning. I guess that was after the second night. And I was so exhausted. I've never felt that exhausted. And it's just like I was tired, but I was okay. Like, my body felt okay. It just felt like it was never going to end. And I was going to be doing this for the rest of my life. And I don't feel that as often. I've worked a lot through these anxious thoughts, but for some reason that did incite some anxiety, and not quite an adult temper tantrum, but I was having quite the fit, you can ask Rascal. And so that was definitely the lowest low. Got through that and just kept moving. And that's all you really can do in these things. There's never this magic fix that you have. I've learned that in all my attempts. I've done all these FKTs, and I just learned now that there's not a magic thing you can do. It's just keep going. Mm-hmm. And it takes patience. And the highest high, oh my gosh. Oh, let me tell you about this other low, though. Scott was pacing me for the last, 16 miles. And I was so exhausted. I was walking so absolutely slowly. I was on a different planet completely. And I see this stick. And this is right after I saw a melting person, by the way. That was another hallucination. It was terrifying. It was
actually
a tree that had been disintegrating. But I saw this branch. And for some reason, I was like, this is coming with me. This branch is coming with me to the end. And so I picked it up. And Scott sees this. He comes up behind me. He's like, let me just take that. And he takes the stick right out of my hands and throws it. I'm like, I was going to take that with me. And then I also completely and totally forgot his name. I was like, what is your name? I don't think I said that. And then he was like, you forgot my name, didn't you? I was like, yeah. He was like, well, it's Shaq, because we had been eating Shaq gummies. And he told me his name was Shaq. It's hilarious. That was a low, but it was just so disorienting the entire time. But then the highest high, I would say the highest high was probably Madonna and Whiteface. I felt so strong. It was the middle of the first night, and I was just like, I was sending it up Whiteface, Madonna, just feeling like this super person. It was incredible. It was the best feeling.
Nice. I love it when you have moments like that out in the middle of these things.
Yeah.
Tori, how about you? Lowest low, highest high?
All right. Well, I get to share two lowest lows too then.
Yeah, definitely.
My first lowest low was on the third day. I crossed Afgap, which is after Camel's Hump, and for going over Abraham and Ellen. And I passed Afgap, and it was super hot. It was middle of the day. There were tourists everywhere. So the road was super busy. But obviously, it's unsupported. So I can't, take any trail magic or... I was also out of water for about 10 miles at that point and couldn't ask anyone for water. And I had no idea if there was going to be water at the next shelter, which didn't end up being water there, but that's another story. So I got to Afgap. I crossed the gap. I knew I had this horrible climb coming up, and I sat down on a rock and I started crying, and I called my roommate and I said, I just really want to hitch into Wade's Field and go to Canteen Creamy and get a maple creamy. And I was actually having a fit, like bawling, very upset. And then my roommate asked me what I was going to do about it. And I said, well, I guess I'm just going to keep walking. And I was pretty upset about it, but I did end up hiking on. My second lowest low was on the last day going down into Route 9, which is the last big road crossing. It's a super long descent out of Glastonbury and then the end of it, the last mile, is a lot of really big rocks. And my feet were screaming at that point. Every step just was excruciating nerve pain. And yeah, I didn't have anything left, any ibuprofen or anything to do any foot care. So I was just really trying to get out of my own head at that point. And that was pretty, pretty rough. My highest high was on night 3. So after the app gap incident, that day turned itself around. I ended up hitting the bread loaves at dusk or sunset, and I was hoping to get there earlier. I still had a lot of miles that I wanted to get done that day. I was feeling discouraged, but then for some reason I started climbing into the bread loaves and just felt great. I was like, I don't think I need to sleep tonight. And I just ended up hiking through the bread loaves most of the night. I got to Middlebury Gap and went through there. And I think I got up to the top of Middlebury Snow Bowl and the sun was coming up, and I finally took a nap in the little ski shelter thing up there. But that night was really good.
Anything else you'd like to share about this experience and a takeaway or anything that we haven't touched on, Tara?
Yeah, I just think it's so important to support our trail maintainers, the clubs surrounding these trails, like the Long Trail. It's so historic and it's gorgeous. People are out there maintaining it and it's an amazing trail. So I think people, one, should go out there and experience the Long Trail in Vermont, and then two, also donate to these, like the Green Mountain Club. If you appreciate the trail, I think that's something that I took out of this. I've always donated, but being on the Long Trail and just seeing how gorgeous it is, seeing how many people are out there. There's a lot of volunteers, but there's also a lot of people that are paid to do it. But just seeing them out there doing it is inspiring. So I think I just took away just the importance of supporting our local trail networks and those who maintain it.
Yeah, the Long Trail has a very thriving community around it for sure. Tori, how about you? Anything that you'd like to share or add, or anything we didn't talk about that you'd like to touch on?
Not too much. I mean, I guess just like for me, since this was a first experience and, you know, a scary like thing to attempt, I would just say that like anyone thinking about doing something outside of their comfort zone or their known skill set should just go for it. If you put in the work and, you know, put in the effort for training, it really just becomes a mental battle. And if you want it badly enough, you can get it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you both for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. It was good chatting with you about the Long Trail.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Tara and Tori, for coming on the show. You can read about their FKTs on the website, fastestknowntime.com, and follow their adventures on Instagram at tara.dower and tconstantine3.